Sherlock Holmes. We present The Adventure of the Grace Chalice by Roger Johnson.
The new Emperor of Germany has dismissed Bismarck and appointed a new Chancellor. Holmes? Knowledge of politics feeble. The Prince of Wales has officially opened the Fourth Bridge. Apparently it's a remarkable structure in itself, and the view from the train is very beautiful on a good day. Samuel and Joseph Boswell are to be executed at Worcester on Tuesday for the murder of a gamekeeper. The fatal shot was actually fired by their accomplice Alfred Hill. Hill's sentence has been reduced to penal servitude for life, and yet the Boswells will hang for a crime of which they are innocent. Holmes, this is a disgraceful miscarriage of justice. Even the local gentry have protested to the Home Secretary. No, it's a matter for the lawyers and the politicians, I suppose. Not for a private detective. A pity that English justice should come to this. Pinero has a new play opening at the Court Theatre at the Cabinet Minister. I've always enjoyed his comedies. Holmes? Holmes? This wretched damp weather does my old wound no good at all. I have a medal somewhere. That's my official souvenir of the Second Afghan War. But the bullet in my shoulder is a more effective reminder. There's no clasp. Did you know that? The Battle of My Wand was such a disaster for our forces that no clasp was issued. Just a medal. For pity's sake, Holmes, do you really have nothing better to do than stand at the window glowering down at the street? What was it you said when we first met? I get in the dump sometimes and don't open my mouth for days on end. You must not think I'm sulky when I do that.
Watson, unless I'm much mistaken, we have a client.
Thank heaven for that.
Plump, well-dressed, middle-aged, purposeful, and not without self-esteem. He has paid off the cab and is approaching our door. Let us hope he brings something of interest.
Let us hope so.
Mrs. Hudson, please show our visitor in. Good morning, sir. My name is Sherlock Holmes. This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson. Now, which of us have you come to consult?
It is you, Mr. Holmes, you.
Capital. Then please be seated, sir. The basket chair is comfortable, I think. And now, if you please, consult.
Thank you, sir, thank you. My name is Henry Staunton. Perhaps it is familiar to you?
Ah, yes. Surely I have seen you at Christie's and Sotheby's. You have a reputation as a connoisseur of objets d'art, I think.
It is true, sir. I am a man of somewhat retiring and, I might even say, refined tastes. I like to surround myself with elegance and beauty. I do not live extravagantly, but I may perhaps call myself a patron of the arts. It is my weakness.
But what is it that brings you to Baker Street, Mr. Staunton?
Sir, I am the victim of a most audacious theft.
Indeed. This is really most interesting.
What has been stolen, Mr. Staunton?
It is nothing less, Doctor, than the Grace Chalice.
The Grace Holmes?
It was made for the monks of Melcarth Abbey sometime in the 15th century. The records say that it is made of Welsh gold, elaborately chased with biblical symbols. When the monastery was dissolved, the chalice was not among the valuables appropriated by the crown, though Thomas Cromwell's commissioners made a thorough search. It came to light more than a century later, after the Civil War, when the Grace family acquired the property. I was not aware that the chalice had been sold.
It was a private transaction, Mr. Holmes. Entirely private. I bought the chalice from Sir Cedric Grace just 10 days ago. Thanks to some unfortunate investments, the old gentleman was obliged to sell some of his more valuable possessions. Discreetly, of course. Most discreetly. And it was my good luck to purchase that particular gem. I may say that it cost me a very considerable sum. A pretty penny, sir, but I do not grudge it, for the chalice is unique, quite unique.
And since you have come to me instead of the police, Mr. Staunton, I take it that the precious object was not stolen from your bank, but from your own house.
You are correct, sir. I wished to make a proper study of the chalice before depositing it with my bankers. I had, of course, taken out an insurance policy upon it.
Where do you live, Mr. Staunton?
The house is called Holly Trees. It is not large, but it suits my needs, and the situation close to Highgate Ponds is very charming. I'm a bachelor, you see, and I live a simple life.
Pray continue, Mr. Staunton.
Ah, yes. There is a safe in my study, securely built into the wall and hidden behind a looking glass. That, of course, is where I kept the chalice. You may imagine my distress, my utter distress, sir, when this very morning I discovered the safe unlocked and the chalice gone.
You would be well advised, I think, to give the police a description of the chalice.
I should rather not have to deal with the police, Dr. Watson. I value my privacy, and I do not relish the thought of large, clumsy boots trampling through my house and garden. No, I prefer to call upon the skill and discretion of Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
That is very good of you, Mr. Staunton. You will appreciate, however, that I must have all the details, no matter how trivial they may seem.
Of course, sir, of course. Well, my housekeeper, Mrs. Elliot, called me at 7 o'clock this morning, slightly earlier than usual, and she was in a most agitated state. Rather than trust to her somewhat incoherent account, I went myself directly to my study, where I found the safe door standing open and the study window broken. Here, plainly, the miscreant had gained entrance, inserting his hand through the broken pane and unfastening the latch. I observed also a double line of footprints running across the bare, damp earth from the high garden wall and returning thither.
One moment, Mr. Staunton. Are we to understand that your study overlooks bare earth?
It does seem odd, sir, put like that. But the matter is simply explained. The ground has been prepared for a new lawn, but my gardener has strained his back and the turves have not yet been laid. A fortunate thing, as I am sure you will agree, sir. Most fortunate, for now we have the clearest clues as to the thief's means of entrance and egress. Naturally, I have left strict instructions that the footprints are to be left untouched.
Very sensible.
Yes, indeed. Well, Mr. Staunton, I think that we had better come at once and investigate the scene of the crime. I shall just gather a few essential items of equipment. Watson, will you call a cab? Now, Mr. Staunton, you have mentioned your housekeeper. What other staff have you at Holly Trees?
Well, besides Mrs. Elliot, there are the maid and the gardener. That's all. I live very simply, as I've told you, sir.
And there is no one else in your immediate household? You have no guests, no lodgers?
No, indeed, sir. I am not what you would call a sociable man. I have no family and very few friends. I do not wish for more.
Your study is on the ground floor, Mr. Staunton. But is it at the front or the back of the house?
It is at the front, sir.
So a passerby could see the study window from the street?
Oh, dear me, no. No, indeed. The entire property is surrounded by a high brick wall. Well, there is a gate, of course, but that is as high as the wall and made of solid oak planks. As I told you, sir, I value my privacy.
No doubt there is a gate at the back as well.
Oh, there is, Mr. Holmes, but it is kept locked. The only person who ever uses it is the gardener, Albert Lowry, who comes and goes that way. He rents a cottage in Bacon's Lane.
Mr. Staunton?
Lowry thinks himself a wit, sir, but he has only one joke. His room overlooks the cemetery. He calls it the dead centre of the village. It is not a very good joke, I fear.
So the gardener does not live in. Where do the other servants sleep?
Ah, yes. Mrs. Elliot's two rooms occupy the second floor back. She can almost see Hampstead Heath from her sitting room window, I believe. The maid, Sarah Gilbert, sleeps in the attic at the back of the house.
And where is your own bedroom, Mr. Staunton?
I also sleep at the rear of the house, Doctor, and I sleep the sleep of the just. Like the servants, I was quite unaware that my property was under attack last night. It is a wicked world, gentlemen, a wicked world. Ah, but here we are. Welcome to Holly Trees, gentlemen.
The gate and the wall are quite as formidable as you suggested, Mr. Staunton. The wall must be at least 9 feet high.
10.5 feet, I should say, Watson.
The ground is quite bare, as you see, right up to the front of the house. And there are the stacks of turf, just waiting for Lowry to lay them. You will wish to inspect the footprints, of course.
All in good time, Mr. Staunton. Now, Watson, how far would you say it is from the house to the garden wall?
Not more than 20 yards, Holmes. On a good day, this garden must be a pleasant spot. Or it will be, once the new lawn is laid. But the property is not extensive.
Just so. Your study is on the right of the front door, Mr. Staunton.
So it is, sir. But how... The broken window, of course. Yes, and the parlour is on the left.
Very good. Now for the footprints. I don't wish to trample on this flower bed, Mr. Staunton, but I see a way through just ahead of us.
Thank goodness we've had no rain today. Your intended lawn would be a sea of mud, Mr. Staunton, and we might well have lost the burglar's footprints.
Instead, the ground is just firm enough for us, and the prints are perfectly preserved. Very fortunate. Well, before the weather does take a turn for the worse, we should take a cast of these prints. Watson, will you please fetch me a bucket of water? There must be a bucket and a tap in the scullery. I'm sure Mr. Staunton will show you.
Water, sir?
To mix with plaster of Paris, Mr. Staunton. Didn't you notice how heavy Holmes's bag is?
Oh, yes. Come with me, Doctor.
Don't be too long, Watson. Capital. I've rarely seen such clear prints. Our man has a long stride. Perhaps he was eager to cross the garden as quickly as possible without running. The night was rather dark, was it not?
These impressions are quite remarkably sharp. It looks to me as if the boots were new. They're large, too. What size would you say, Holmes?
Size 11, Watson, no doubt about it. The preservation of the footprints is fortunate, but the newness of the boots is not. There has not been time for their owner to impress his personality upon them.
The burglar could hardly have left plainer traces if he had intended to.
Indeed.
Will you not come and examine the study, Mr. Holmes? That is where the theft took place, after all.
By all means, Mr. Staunton. You know, there are two very singular features here, Watson. For instance, our man seems to have let himself down from the wall with commendable delicacy.
Yes, I noticed that. There's no indication that he jumped, and I see no sign that a ladder was used. Still, it's not impossible that he dropped delicately to the ground.
Well, our burglar certainly knew what he was doing. This window has been broken in a most efficient manner. The pane was smeared with... treacle, and has been covered with a sheet of strong brown paper. There would have been very little noise, and the broken glass could just be pulled away to leave an opening. The thief removed just one pane and reached through like this to undo the latch. And here on the sill is the print of his left boot, muddy and indistinct, as one might expect. No matter. Let us enter the room.
Holmes, not that way, surely.
Very well. The front door it is, then.
As you see, gentlemen, I choose the company of art and literature over that of my fellow men. That landscape is by Madame Vigée-Lebrun, and the portrait is the work of Godfrey Shalkin. Both are genuine. I have my doubts about the Fragonard on the far wall, but you will admit that it is very charming.
We are digressing, Mr. Staunton. Mr. Holmes is...
Just examining the floor, Watson. These muddy marks tell us nothing more, I fear. Let us look at the safe. Behind the looking-glass, I think you said, Mr. Staunton.
That is correct, sir. I have the key here.
Yes. Chatwood. A good make, though perhaps you should have invested in something more sophisticated. A really competent burglar would have no great difficulty in picking this lock. It appears to have been opened with a key, however. It has certainly not been forced. And nothing was taken except the chalice.
Nothing except the chalice, sir. I begin to suspect that I've harboured a spy in my house, but I cannot think how that could be. The servants are certainly innocent. Both the maid and the gardener have been in my employ for at least 15 years, and the invaluable Mrs. Elliot has worked for my family since I was a young man. I trust them all, sir, trust them implicitly. Besides, I'm quite sure that none of them knew of my purchase. Even the housekeeper never enters this room without my express permission.
Is there only one key to the safe?
There are two, Doctor. I carry this one upon my watch-chain at all times.
And the other?
It is with my bankers, Holder and Stevenson.
Very good. Now, you have cleared your servants of suspicion. Have you entertained any visitors during the past 10 days?
No. Oh, yes. Yes, there has been one visitor. In fact, he spent 2 evenings here. But you need not suspect him, Mr. Holmes. The idea is quite absurd. I have told you that I am not a sociable man, but once a week I play écarté or piquet with my cousin Walter Ruskin. Sometimes we meet here, and sometimes at Walter's house at Mill Hill. He is a bachelor, like me, with no other close family.
Ruskin? Is that Ruskin the gunsmith with the shop in Jermyn Street?
That is correct, Doctor, though Walter retired 6 months ago. He's a good fellow. We've been friends since boyhood.
Did you tell him about the chalice, Mr. Staunton?
Yes. Yes, I did. All he said was that I ought to deposit it in a bank vault as soon as possible.
Your spare safe key is secure, but your cousin might perhaps have had the opportunity to take an impression of the key on your watch chain. Such things can be done quickly and discreetly.
It is possible, Mr. Holmes. Physically possible, I mean. I cannot believe that Walter would stoop to such a thing. Besides, he would have no cause to steal from me. He is my creditor, not my debtor, thanks to our weekly gaming. I owe him a substantial sum, as it happens.
Nevertheless, Mr. Staunton, we must examine every possibility. Can you give us a description of your cousin?
If I must, Doctor. Walter is quite as tall as Mr. Holmes here, but more heavily built. He is 59 years of age, with thick dark hair and a heavy moustache. His eyes are light brown, hazel, I think is the word.
Do you know what size he takes in boots?
Oh, really, Mr. Holmes? I am not sure. Walter is much taller than I, and his feet are larger than mine. Larger than yours, too, I should say. Size 10, perhaps, or even size 11.
Well, Mr. Staunton, I think we have done all we can do here, for the time being, at least. My next move must be to call upon Mr. Walter Ruskin, if you will kindly give me his address. I have a curious feeling that this is one of those straightforward cases that turn out to be not quite so straightforward after all.
Walter's address is Kingsland, Wiseman's Lane, Mill Hill. But I assure you, Mr. Holmes, that you are barking up the wrong tree.
Thank you, Mr. Staunton. I shall let you know as soon as I have something to report. Come, Watson.
Holmes, you said that there are 2 odd features here in the garden. What is the second?
You didn't notice it. Why, it was simply that the 2 lines of prints are quite separate. At no point do the footprints leaving the house overlap those made in going to the house. Now, old fellow, I shall endeavour to make my way to Mill Hill. I think perhaps you should return to Baker Street. You probably do well to get some lunch on the way. I know how grumpy you can get if you miss your lunch.
Whereas a problem like this is meat and drink to you. Very well, Holmes. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Lestrade, how are you? Mrs. Hudson told me you were here. You've not been waiting long, I hope.
Only a few minutes, Doctor. It's good to see you again. Mr. Holmes not with you?
No, he's off on a case. Gone to Mill Hill. I can't say what time he'll be back. Do sit down again. Would you care for a cigar?
Oh, thank you, Doctor. I don't mind if I do. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Inspector, Is it good news or bad? What brings you here this afternoon?
Good news in a way, I think. Do you remember Esmond Northcott?
I do indeed. Very nasty piece of work. Card sharp. And a blackmailer murderer, too, I think.
Well, we could never prove the murder, but we did get Northcott sentenced to 5 years hard labour on the blackmail charge. He was sent to Maidstone.
5 years? Then he must have served his time by now. You surely haven't come just to tell us that Northcott has been released.
No, that's not the whole story, Dr. Watson, but I think I shall save the important part until Mr. Holmes returns. You don't mind if I wait here, I hope?
My dear fellow, I shall be delighted.
Thank you, Doctor. Can you tell me something about the case Mr. Holmes is investigating?
Yes. Yes, why not? Have you ever heard of the Grace Chalice, Inspector? No, neither had I until this morning. I don't need to say anything about the chalice itself, except that it's made of gold, and it's worth more money than you or I could ever...
Retiring nature? Clumsy boots? These people are their own worst enemies. He should at least have reported the theft at the local police station and given the duty officer a good description of the stolen item.
That's just what I said, but he wouldn't hear of it. Ah, here's Holmes now.
He doesn't sound any too happy, does he?
Don't like it, Watson. I don't like it at all. Walter Ruskin hasn't been seen since yesterday evening. The only positive information to emerge is that Ruskin does take size 11 in boots. Ah, Lestrade. To what do we owe this visit?
It's about Esmond Northcott, Holmes.
Northcott? He was released 3 days ago from Maidstone Prison. What about him?
He disappeared from view almost immediately, Mr. Holmes, but we think we found him again.
You think?
I put it like that because the man we have is dead and rather horribly mutilated. It's not a nice thing, sir. The man's face has been quite burned off with acid. He was killed by a savage blow to the head and, well, there's not enough of the face left to identify him, but all the rest fits. He's a big man, muscles well developed from rowing, good head of hair. We found him this morning in Abney Park Cemetery, of all places, behind one of the tombs. I don't suppose many decent people will mourn him, but we're still bound to search for his killer. Anyway, Mr. Holmes, as you took such an interest in Esmond Northcott's arrest and trial, I thought you might wish to come and see the body.
Why not? There are no threads in my current investigation, or none that I can follow today. By all means, let us visit the mortuary. Oh, Watson, will you come?
Certainly, Holmes.
Thank you, Doctor. There'll be a post-mortem, of course, but I may be grateful for your medical knowledge. I shall go and hail a cab. Gentlemen, Stoke Newington Mortuary. Thank you, Jackson. We shan't need you. Over here, Mr. Holmes. This is the one.
If I were a squeamish man, I should not have taken up medicine as a profession. Even so, I have to say that this is one of the most appalling things I have ever seen. Not even in Afghanistan.
Man's inhumanity to man, eh, Doctor? Oh, I'm no philosopher, but something like this... Well, it almost makes me despair for the future of the country.
That will do, Lestrade. We must look upon the dead clay before us not as the mutilated shell of a fellow man, but merely as an object of professional...
Quite right, Mr. Holmes. Quite right. Well, the post-mortem will begin at 6:30 this evening. Dr. Barnes can't be available before then. But there's no doubt in my mind that the death was caused by a blow or series of blows to the back of the head.
2 blows at least, I should say. With a heavy and very hard object, you can feel where the occipital and parietal bones have been shattered.
It's a brutal business, but it would not be reason enough in itself to bring us all the way from Baker Street. The complete obliteration of the facial features is decidedly unusual, however.
Thank heaven. All I can say in mitigation is that the destruction of the victim's face was carried out after death.
So I read it, Watson. How long has he been dead?
You know very well that I can't give you a definite answer, Holmes. Particularly as the body was found out of doors. The flesh is elastic... Rigor mortis has passed. My estimation puts the time of death at 12 to 24 hours ago.
What are the man's clothes, Lestrade?
They're at the police station, Mr. Holmes. You can examine them if you like, but I don't think they'll tell you much. The body was dressed only in good quality long johns. No hat, no boots, no outer clothing at all.
And no jewellery either, I suppose.
None.
Whoever killed this man was determined to eradicate his identity entirely. Esmond Northcote has disappeared from view, so you think that this is he. There is a superficial resemblance, but I think I can prove to you that you are mistaken.
Oh?
Feel the muscles of the forearms, Watson.
Yes, they're very well developed, just as the inspector said.
They are indeed, but if I take the hands in my own and close the fists, feel those muscles again.
Good Lord. That's astonishing. Even without touching it, I can see that the muscle of the left forearm is far more highly developed than the other. It stands out like an egg.
Well, that rules out Northcote. He's right-handed, but this man must have been left-handed. And remarkably strong.
No. If he had been left-handed, then we would be marvelling at the muscular development of his right forearm. I know of only one activity that can cause the muscle to swell like that. It happens through years of taking the recoil of a rifle.
Then you think this is...
I do.
Tall? Well built? Thick dark hair? Large feet?
Ah. Watson has told you of our current investigation, has he? Yes, Lestrade, this can only be the retired gunsmith, Walter Ruskin.
Another fugitive? But who'd want to kill him, Mr. Holmes? And who in heaven's name would want to do that to his body?
Who indeed? Lestrade, I must ask you to restrain your natural impatience. There are some further inquiries to be made, but I shall not be able to get the answers until tomorrow morning. Meanwhile, can you arrange for a constable to keep watch overnight on Mr. Henry Staunton's house?
You think he's in danger, then? From the person who murdered his cousin? Very well, Mr. Holmes, we'll go straight to Highgate Police Station and I'll make sure that it's done.
Excellent. Now, let us gather our belongings and allow the good Jackson to lock up here. I'm sure you will not refuse another cigar when we return to Baker Street and perhaps a glass of brandy to help keep out the cold, of course.
Thank you kindly, Mr. Holmes. That'll be most welcome. And on the way back, maybe you'll fill me in on the details regarding this very nasty business.
Yes, please do, Holmes. The picture is almost complete in my mind, but there are still some pieces missing. I'm not entirely sure of the connection between the death of Walter Ruskin and the theft of the Grace Chalice.
Mr. Holmes. Dead on time, if you'll forgive the expression. Afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon, Inspector.
You're quite prepared, Lestrade?
All ready, sir.
Have you brought just the one, Constable?
Now, there are two, Mr. Holmes. PC Maynear has come with me from the station, and PC Rowan has been guarding the house since the small hours. Rowan's expecting us, of course, and he'll unlock the gate at, right now. Like a fortress, this place. Thank you, Constable. Well, in we go.
May I ask you and your men to stand back a little, Lestrade? Thank you. Now.
I wonder what he'll say.
Thank you, Sarah. I shall take care of this. You may go.
Good afternoon, Mr. Saunders.
Good afternoon, fiddlesticks. I have a bone to pick with you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. I specifically told you that I did not wish to call in the police. And almost immediately, you send a uniformed clodhopper to my house. And bless my soul, here are yet more policemen. What is the meaning of this, sir?
Yesterday, Mr. Staunton, you commissioned me to investigate the theft of a rare and valuable medieval chalice. Dr. Watson advised you, if you recall, at least to report your loss to the police.
Well, sir?
Mr. Staunton, can we not pursue this conversation indoors? We have some rather shocking information for you.
Oh, very well, if you insist. Come through to the study.
Come, Inspector. You men will remain here until you are needed.
Policeman in the house now. What is the world coming to? In here, if you please.
It's just like a Bond Street gallery, isn't it, Doctor?
Well, sir, what information could be so shocking that it requires the presence of a police officer?
You told us yesterday, Mr. Staunton, that the only person apart from yourself and your insurance broker who knew that you had the Grace Chalice in this house was your cousin, Walter Ruskin. You also told us that he was above suspicion.
I did, sir, I did.
But the matter has been much on my mind since we spoke, and I confess that I am less certain now of my cousin's innocence. I told him about the chalice just the day after I bought it. That was 10 days ago. We next met just 6 days later. That was our last evening together, and there was at least one occasion during the course of that evening when he had the opportunity to take an impression of my key. Dear me, what a wicked world it is, to be sure.
When I went over to Mill Hill, your cousin's man Perkins informed me that he had left his house at 7:30 the previous evening and had not returned. As he was punctilious in his habits, the servants were becoming decidedly uneasy. Perkins suggested that I make inquiries here, Mr. Staunton, or at your cousin's club. Of course, I assured him that his master was not here, and you will not be surprised to learn that he had not been seen at his club for several days. In short, it seemed that Walter Ruskin had disappeared.
Dear me. Well, that seems to settle the matter. Walter Ruskin a thief. Stealing from his own cousin. Who would have thought it?
But you can see now that the case has become a matter for the police, Mr. Staunton.
To think that Walter, of all people, should prove a villain.
But there is more.
Oh?
Late yesterday afternoon, Inspector Lestrade here asked us to go over to Stoke Newington to examine a body that had been discovered there. The man had been battered to death. Then his body was stripped, and the facial features disfigured beyond recognition. Nevertheless, I was able to identify the deceased as your cousin, Walter Ruskin.
Oh dear. Is it possible that my suspicions were mistaken? Can there be a madman at large? Is the same person responsible for both crimes, do you suppose?
I fear that is the case, Mr. Staunton.
Then I must insist on police protection. Mr. Inspector, I really must insist on police protection.
It won't do, you know. Really, it won't. We have the cabman who brought you back from Abney Park. He distinctly remembers the large leather bag that you carried. I've no doubt that it contained your cousin's clothes, and most importantly, his boots. You had a use for those boots, I think.
Lies! All lies!
Your cousin had agreed to meet you by one of the tombs in the cemetery. I don't know what reason you devised for the meeting, but it was really very careless of you to leave his body so close to that particular monument. It marks the resting place of Walter Ruskin's maternal grandfather, Marcus Staunton, whose second son was, of course, your own father.
Lies!
I made other inquiries this morning. The results were very enlightening. It seems that in recent years you have been gambling heavily upon the stock exchange, and losing heavily, too. You have taken out a substantial mortgage upon this house, a mortgage which is in peril of foreclosure. The considerable debt that you owe to your more wealthy cousin must have been the final provocation, even though it is unenforceable in law.
Dr. Watson, I appeal to you.
You resented your cousin's wealth, and I think you resented the fact that he had bequeathed it to the Royal Humane Society and not to you. The opportunity to buy the Grace Chalice suggested further opportunities to you. You made certain that your cousin, and only he, knew of your purchase, and when the chalice was removed, suspicion would inevitably fall upon him. At the same time, of course, you ensured that the money you owed him need never be paid.
Ingenious, really.
Too clever by half.
You yourself removed the precious object from the safe. I have no doubt that it is carefully hidden somewhere in the house. Your object, plainly, was to claim on the insurance while retaining possession of the chalice. You may even have intended to sell it. Such illicit transactions are not, alas, uncommon. Then, wearing your cousin's boots, which are at least 3 sizes larger than your own, you planted those incriminating footprints in the garden, taking long strides to give the impression of a taller man. It was unfortunate for you that the boots were new and could not be easily identified as his, but that could not be helped.
The notion of a thief climbing over that wall was not wholly satisfactory. But how were the footprints managed? They lead from the garden wall to the study window and back.
You're looking at things back to front, Watson. Do you remember the second curious quality of those prints?
Ah, yes, of course. The 2 lines of prints are close but quite separate.
Just so. What burglar would ever tread so artistically?
We were told that an intruder had walked from the wall to the study window and back. Consequently, the footprints appeared to us to confirm our client's story, whereas...
In fact, the person who left those prints had walked from the study to the garden wall and back, taking great care on his return not to tread on any of the impressions made on his outward journey. Had he not stepped so carefully, the fact of an inside job would have been plain to the meanest intelligence. In all probability, then, our client himself was responsible for this charade.
Lies, I tell you! Lies!
Henry Staunton, I arrest you for the willful murder of Walter Hugh Ruskin. I must warn you that anything you say will be taken down and may be used in evidence. Hold on to him, gentlemen, while I get the derbies on him. Rowan, Maine, come in here. I've worked for you.
Capital. First, I think Rowan must take our friend here to the police station. Then we should set Maine to work searching the house for the chalice. It is here, I'm certain of it. While the good constable is thus occupied, we three shall speak with the housekeeper and the maid. The kitchen is the proper place for that.
I have rarely felt so relieved at seeing a criminal taken into custody.
Envy and resentment have gnawed away at his soul, I fear. He hated his cousin as only a mean man can hate a generous and contented one.
Our case will be complete if we can only find the boots, you know. There's little chance of that now, is there?
I'm not so sure. For all his elaborate planning, Staunton has been singularly careless. It would not surprise me if Maine uncovers the boots as well as the chalice.
In this, as in so much else, Holmes was correct. The precious cup had been concealed under a flagstone in the wine cellar. Walter Ruskin's boots were found among Staunton's own footwear. They proved to fit exactly those clear, sharp prints in the garden of holly trees. A few days later came word that the Edinburgh police had apprehended Esmond Northcote and charged him with common assault. He was able to prove an alibi and left the court a free man. No such conclusion was possible for Henry Staunton. He was hanged at Pentonville Prison. And it seems that the loyal Mrs. Elliot was his only mourner.
You have been listening to The Adventure of the Grace Chalice, dramatized by Roger Johnson from his own story. You heard Jim Crozier as Sherlock Holmes and Dave Hawkes as Dr. Watson, with Brian Adrian as Henry Staunton and M.J. Elliott as Inspector Lestrade. The play was recorded at Pigpen Studio by David Booth and John Rhodes for Hozzie Prog Productions. The producer was Roger Johnson.